Folks, the people of this nation have spoken. They've delivered us a clear victory, a convincing victory, a victory for we, the people. We've won with the most votes ever cast on a presidential ticket in the history of the nation.
It's now been 2 weeks since the U.S. election. Joe Biden has won a clear victory. It's a big deal. Trump is the first incumbent president to be ousted since 1992, only the fifth in 100 years.
Well, I must admit, it surprised me. Tonight, we're seeing all over this nation, all cities and all parts of the country, indeed across the world, an outpouring of joy, of hope, renewed faith in tomorrow, bring a better day.
With the worst COVID outbreak in the world and an economic crisis not seen since the Great Depression, the U.S. desperately needs unity and decisive action. But the Democrats' failure to capture the Senate, unless they win two tough January races in Georgia, means Republicans can still block much of Biden's agenda. Meanwhile, millions are living in an alternative reality.
If you count the legal votes, I easily win. If you count the illegal votes, they can try to steal the election from us if you count the votes that came in late.
I'm Mary Fitzgerald, editor-in-chief of Open Democracy. Over the past month, I've traveled more than 1,400 miles across the United States with my colleague, Aaron White, speaking with people from all walks of life. With the country more fractured than ever, is there any hope that Biden can deliver what's needed? And what are the consequences if he doesn't? In the last episode, we left you in my father's hometown of Louisville, deep in the Midwestern red state of Kentucky. It was 2 days before the election. We heard from my grandparents, who still live there, about what it was like growing up under racial segregation. Here's my grandfather, Jerry.
We just took segregation for granted. It was like it really didn't exist.
And we saw how a resurgent Black Lives Matter movement is challenging the deep ongoing racial divisions in Louisville and across the country. These activists did not have hope that things would dramatically change under Biden.
And I won't stop till change happens. That's how I feel. I'm tired. I got to work at 5 a.m. this morning. I'm tired. But I won't stop till change happens.
But when we left Louisville, crossing the river into the key swing state of Ohio, we got a different picture.
Okay, so we've just arrived in Cincinnati, Ohio. It is November 2nd, 1 day before the general election, and we're at an early voting location. What are you seeing, Mary?
I'm seeing lines and lines of cars and people, and the sidewalk is festooned with political ads because there's a race here not only for the next, who's going to be the next president, but for Congress, and no one seems to really trust the system, so they're all dropping off their ballots, making sure their ballots have been counted, and queuing for hours to ensure that they can vote in person.
At this busy early voting site, we met Umaira, a young Democratic canvasser who told us why she thinks a Biden presidency will be transformative for families like hers.
As a child of immigrants, my family comes from Pakistan. Like, we have been hit by the Trump presidency in the most negative way. I vote for the people that can't vote themselves. So I vote for my family, I vote for my immigrant parents, and I vote for the minorities in this country that aren't able to get the justice that they deserve. And I'm really excited to see Joe Biden take the country back tomorrow.
While Biden prevailed, Umaira's hopes of turning Ohio blue fell short. And in this key state, which voted decisively for Trump again, I saw just how entrenched the opposition to Biden will be over the next 4 years. Here's the only Republican canvasser who would speak to me that day, and she refused to be filmed.
I love Donald Trump, and I'm ashamed of the American people that they can't recognize all the wonderful things he's done for us. Closing our borders, you know, so we have security, and I mean, we were letting anything come into this country from anywhere, you know, and they weren't even legit. They didn't have to go through immigration or anything. They just walked in and found a place to live. And anyway, it's just, He tells it like it is. Nobody else tells it like it is. You know, I don't ever hear him lie. They say he lies all the time. You know, the media has done an incredible job trying to destroy him, and he's been the best president we have ever had in my lifetime.
On election day in Columbus, Ohio's state capital, we heard many of the same things in Snow's Bar, a small neighborhood establishment in a working-class area on the outskirts of the city. We met JD, a regular who always turned up for Tuesday's pool night. A one-time Marine and property owner, he now lived in the trailer park nearby. He told us that lots of people in his neighborhood had had enough of Democrats and Republicans.
There's a lot of Democrats I know is going, they're not going Republican, they're going Trump. Because he's not a Republican, he's not a Democrat. He's a businessman. We need to run this country like a business and start taking care of our country.
But this distrust in both political parties was not unique to Trump voters. We heard it across the political divide. Traveling from Ohio through Pennsylvania, we stopped in the small city of Reading, just outside Philadelphia. We spoke to Justine Sater, a Latina healthcare business owner who explained her decision not to vote this time around.
The last few months have just been overshadowed by both candidates. There have been no strides in finding anything to help the situation. You have parents that have to choose between working or staying home with their kids to homeschool, and people are just trying to figure out how to, you know, pay their bills and also, you know, keep a roof over their head due to, you know, everything going on with COVID, and they haven't done anything to help the situation. As for Biden, I mean, it's kind of picking the lesser of two evils. If there was a different candidate to vote for, when I voted in the preliminaries, I actually voted for Bernie. So I chose not to vote.
When we reached Philadelphia later that day, a pulsing, joyous carnival was already celebrating Biden's impending win. Outside the convention center, where the very final votes were being counted. People were dancing, beating drums, releasing balloons, and handing out free pizza. But down the road, the mood was more somber. A Black Lives Matter rally, demanding that every life count just as much as every vote, was gathering on Broad Street, just a couple of blocks away.
Black men matter!
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 10 days earlier, Philadelphia police had shot and killed a 27-year-old black man, Walter Wallace Jr., sparking protests and violent clashes. It was the latest in a long series of protests over police killings of black people across the country. Our journey had started at exactly these types of protests 10 days ago in Louisville. In Philly, it was local pastor Carl Day who had hastily arranged this Thursday night march.
You know, I felt the need to go ahead and call our men out today. You know, with so much civil unrest going on, potential threats of violence, all kinds of stuff, you know, voter intimidation and everything else. I felt like we, especially as black men in the city, where so many of these movements and uprisings happen behind our lives, but we don't get included in those conversations. So today is a day that we declare that we're gonna start to really be in the front of these conversations, not just part of the conversation, but in the front of it. So that's what this was. I posted a video. I told black men in the city I needed them to get out here and gather with us. And what y'all saw tonight is what we did. We showed up.
Under the new president, will their demands get met? Biden and his running mate, Kamala Harris, have said they will make racial justice a key priority of their administration.
We all know that we must fix our criminal justice system. Here is Joe Biden's plan to reform it. Ending mandatory minimum sentences, ending private prisons, and end cash bail. A real plan for real change.
I believe my criminal justice reform package is as strong or stronger than anyone else, than anyone has proposed.
We will create a system that's fair and just.
And we can get there together.
But many activists we spoke to don't trust their previous track records on the issue.
Joe Biden was one of the reasons the 94 crime bill was passed. And there was this war on drugs that harmed the black community in 1994. So Joe Biden, I'm not for Joe Biden whatsoever. or Kamala Harris. I'm just not. She incarcerated a lot of black men as well, and I don't support that whatsoever. This election is actually worse than the election with Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. At least we had an option. This election leaves us really, really shaken up and really dry.
That's Millie Martin, a Black Lives Matter activist who echoed what many protesters across the country had told us. And Biden has also already rejected what's most important to many of the people we met celebrating his victory in Philadelphia, such as defunding the police or universal health care free at the point of service. So on the one hand, you have Biden voters who want things he can't or won't deliver. On the other hand, you have millions of people who may never accept that Biden is the president. Trump increased his 2016 vote count, and 70% of Republicans now doubt the credibility of the election result. Here's Aaron Johnson, the former policeman I spoke to in episode one.
I can't say that I know that Trump won, but I can say that there's a huge voter fraud issue to the amount that Trump may be declared the winner after all the fraud is gone through and they figure out the proper votes. I'm not saying he did win, but I'm saying there's a really good chance based off of the potential of the amount of fraud that could be found through all the investigations.
He feared that under a Biden presidency, his Second Amendment right, the right to bear arms, a signature issue for millions of Americans, would be under threat. And like so many others we met, he believed that without the Second Amendment, you'd lose the first, the right to free speech.
The average God, you know, quote unquote, God-fearing, gun-toting American is not a big fan of having their Second Amendment or their First Amendment right infringed upon. And all it's going to take is for them to try to, for people that are in for, or people that are forced to come around and try to confiscate guns and stuff like that, that's going to start what I could believe to be some form of civil war within our country. And I'm not, I can't say what side I would be on, because obviously on a personal note, I would not want to lose my Second Amendment right, because if you lose your Second Amendment, you can't protect the first.
Before the vote, I talked with Brian Hughes, an expert on America's far-right and militia movements at American University in Washington, D.C.
I am concerned that people might see a Biden landslide as proof that the far-right and the extreme right in this country aren't a threat, aren't an electoral threat, as well as a terroristic threat. And if that is the case, I would be worried that in 4 to 8 years, the United States will be caught flat-footed by a more competent far-right political movement than Trumpism.
Back home in London, I reached out again to some of the people we talked to on our long journey from Louisville to Philadelphia about whether a Biden administration can really unify and lead. Catching up with my grandparents back in Louisville, Kentucky, where our journey began, they told me they feel relieved and hopeful, and they think that Biden's experience in Washington will be an asset. Here's my granddad, Jerry, who thinks Biden can get things done, even if Republican leader Mitch McConnell keeps power in the Senate.
There's a lot of IOUs probably still collectible in all the other senators that he went across the aisle with. And I think all those IOUs are going to be coming due. And you could say, well, why didn't they come due over when he was spent 8 years with Obama as a vice president? And I think it's a different situation. I think he was against Obama. Obama is out and Biden is in. I think he can work with Obama.
I asked my dad, who grew up in Louisville and voted Republican most of his life, but started voting Democrat under Obama, what he thinks the result means.
Trump got fired. The one takeaway from the 2020 election is that Donald Trump got fired by the American people. And I don't think you can say much more than that. Biden's going to have his hands full just cleaning up after Trump. And really, that's all he can say he has a mandate to do right now is post-Trump cleanup, you know, get his back, stop the crazy, you know, just stop the crazy. And after a few years of stopping the crazy, then I think it can be a question for proper debate and election and mandate or lack thereof to move forward.
Again and again on our journey, people had told us they were tired of the bitterness and division. They wanted the new president to bring the country together to heal. Here's what one elderly Black woman in the small town of Washington, Pennsylvania, told us after casting her vote for Biden.
And it's not only that Black lives matter, all lives matter. Do you bleed red? When you cut yourself, do you bleed red? Everybody in the world bleeds red. So, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're Black, white, green, purple, or orange. As long as we all bleed red, we are Americans, we're one nation, and under God. And that's how I feel.
But looking ahead, I'm less optimistic. The country we saw isn't just intensely divided. Structurally, it just doesn't feel set up to deal with the massive challenges it now faces. And that isn't just a product of the pandemic. It runs deep. Here's Brian Hughes at American University again.
The American conception of freedom has always had this very strong grounding in the ideas of Thomas Jefferson and the idea of the yeoman farmer his ability to operate his sort of own little kingdom on his own little farm, through the power of his reason and his hard work. Well, in fact, that Jeffersonian idea of the free yeoman farmer is really only possible in a colonial setting where there's an ample reserve of land and natural resources that can be taken from the people who are currently using it, in this case, the native populations of this continent. The United States colonized the East Coast, and then it colonized the Midwest, and then it colonized the West Coast, and then it colonized the Gulf Coast, and then it expanded outward into the world with the Pax Americana and the United States' rise as an economic global hegemon. And then it tried to expand out into cyberspace. And well, guess what? We've run out of exploitable frontiers. And Americans who really rely on this Jeffersonian notion of freedom, the psychological stress and strife that comes along with that is really extreme. A Jeffersonian ideal, it's untenable.
Thinking back to so many of the conversations we had across the country, Brian's point about the stress and strife caused by an untenable idea, the American dream, really hits home. This is a country that valorizes searing, vaulting ambition, that tells you that anything is possible if you work hard enough, and that if you fail, it's only your own fault. But as we've seen in both episodes, the country is riven with racial and economic disadvantage and injustice. There are so many things the people we spoke to cannot control, even though they're told over and over that it's the American way to take control of your life, your destiny. No wonder so many people we've heard from have so little faith in institutions of power, be it government or politicians or mainstream media. How could this be built or earned? I spoke to Aditi Juneja of Protect Democracy, a nonpartisan organization working to protect a free and fair electoral process.
Government elected officials, they follow the will of the people, and it is the work of organizers and people on the ground who are in communities, shifting the Overton window, changing what people believe is possible, what people are interested in, what they care about. That is important. We need to have more of a say as a democracy, as a people, in the way that we are governed and communicate with each other, and make sure we have a shared information ecosystem so we can disagree, but we're disagreeing off of a shared set of facts.
A shared set of facts sounds like basic common sense. But from what we saw and heard across the country, this feels almost impossible. In episode one, you heard from Jacquiri Arthur, a Black racial justice activist and the youngest person ever to be elected to the city council back in Louisville. Even though he ran as a Democrat, he was refusing to vote for Joe Biden. When I caught up with him after the election, he was clear about the hard path ahead.
We are handing away votes, as we saw with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, and then celebrating it, dancing in the streets like fools. This is problematic for a long list of reasons. But at the very top of that list is the fact that the conditions we exist in, being 13% of the population, 37% of the prison population, 40% of homelessness, 40% of school suspensions, over 50% of homeless families with less than 3% of the country's wealth, we will remain and suffer and get worse in all of those different disparities unless we totally change the way we go about engaging in politics. Because what we just did with Kamala Harris and Joe Biden set us up for failure. Because now they think they don't have to offer us anything to get our vote. And the Democrats have been doing that for the past 50, 60 years.
And yet what I saw over the past few weeks across red states and blue was something happening almost entirely outside of electoral politics. People getting out of their homes, off their screens, talking to one another, organizing and building things. I was reminded of what Latoya Stafford, another Black Lives Matter activist in Louisville, told me at the beginning of the journey. She's one of many who've been occupying a downtown square every day since March.
The media is missing the love. They're missing the passion, the community. They're missing a lot. They're missing the truth, honestly. Because if you're not out here with us from sunup to sundown, you're missing something. And all they're going to show you is the bad. You miss all the good. I mean, there's been music produced out here. We have art all over the city now. We have saved some of our homeless people. We have got a grocery store brought to the West End. We're going to have a Black Fresh Market down there. But they're not talking about that. They're just talking about us in the street making noise. So I would say this, dig a little deeper. Dig a little deeper. For the people who are at home and are not in the streets, dig a little deeper. Maybe they'll come out too.
I asked Jacory Arthur what gives him hope.
I don't find too much hope in adults. I'm 28, so anyone my age and above. I find hope in something that the greatest abolitionist, who was a runaway slave, once said. He once said that it is easier to build strong children than to repair broken men. And the person who said that was Frederick Douglass. And I live by this and know that our Generation Z, Generation Alpha, are going to bring forth the change that I'm starting a fight for right now. They're going to finish that fight or get further in that fight when they are of adulthood. So they inspire me. They motivate me. They give me hope. My three-year-old gives me hope. The other day we were playing store and he wouldn't even let me shop in his you know, fake toy store unless I wore a mask. That is leadership. And that is leadership that we have adults who aren't even showing in their political practice. So I get hope from Generation Alpha. I get hope for the future of our country because of the wit and the intelligence of the young people, of the teenagers, of the toddlers that we have today. I'm so inspired by them. And that's who I do it for every day when I wake up.
America is entering a dark winter, on track for nearly 500,000 COVID deaths by the end of the year, with millions thrown into poverty. This election result won't immediately change that dire reality. But if there is any hope I took away from our journey, it's not what's happening inside the current system. It's what's happening outside, on the streets of big cities like Louisville and Philadelphia, in small towns like Washington, Pennsylvania, and among a new generation that is daring to imagine a radically different future.
Thank you for listening to this Our Voices podcast from Open Democracy. If you enjoyed this podcast and would encourage others to listen, head to iTunes, subscribe, and leave us a review. Open Democracy is an independent global media platform that is only possible because of your kind donations. To find out more or to make a donation, head to opendemocracy.net.